Nicky's father swept his blonde hair back from his forehead, then turned and picked up his coat. In a level voice, he said to her mother that he was going to go see to some things at work. After he was gone, mother too saw Nicky, forgotten on the floor, playing with beads on a board, pretending to make chainmail. Her arms folded, she stood over Nicky for a long moment. "Your father goes to whores, you know. I'm sure that's where he's off to now, a whore. You may be too young to understand, but I want you to know so that you don't ever put any faith in him. He's an evil man. I'll not be his whore. Now put away your things and come with Mother. I'm going to see my friends. It's time you came along and began learning about the needs of others instead of just your own wants." At her friend's house, there were a few men and several women sitting and talking in serious tones. When they politely inquired after Father, Nicky's mother reported that he was off. "Working or whoring, I don't know which and can control neither." Some of the women laid a hand on her arm and comforted her. It was a terrible burden she bore, they said. Across the room sat a silent man who looked to Nicky as grim as death itself. Mother quickly forgot about Father as she became engrossed in a discussion her friends were having about the terrible conditions of people in the city. People were suffering from hunger, injuries, sickness, disease, lack of skill, no work, too many children to feed, elderly to care for, no clothes, no roof over their heads, and every other kind of strife imaginable. It was all so frightening. Nicky was always anxious when Mother talked about how things couldn't go on the way they were for much longer, and that something had to be done. Nicky wished someone would hurry up and do it. Nicky listened as Mother's fellowship friends talked about all the intolerant people who harbored hate. Nicky feared ending up as one of those terrible people. She didn't want the Creator to punish her for having a cold heart. Mother and her friends went on at great length about their deep feelings for all the problems around them. After each person said their piece, they would steal a glance over at the man sitting solemnly in a straight chair against the wall, watching with careful, dark eyes as they talked. "The prices of things are just terrible," a man with droopy eyelids said. He was all crumpled down in his chair like a pile of dirty clothes. "It isn't fair. People shouldn't be allowed to just raise their prices whenever they want. The Duke should do something. He has the king's ear." "The Duke," Mother said. She sipped her tea. "Yes, I've always found the Duke to be a man sympathetic to good causes. I think he could be persuaded to introduce sensible laws." Mother glanced over the gold rim of her cup at the man in the straight chair. One of the women said she would encourage her husband to back the Duke. Another spoke up that they would write a letter of support for such an idea. "People are starving," a wrinkled woman said into a lull in the conversation. People eagerly mumbled their acknowledgement as if this were an umbrella to run in under to escape the drenching silence.
"I see it every day. If we could just help some of those unfortunate people."
One of the other women puffed herself up like a chicken ready to lay an egg.
"It's just terrible the way no one will give them a job when there's plenty of work, if it was just spread around."
"I know," Mother said with a tisk. "I've talked to Howard until I'm blue in the face. He just hires people who please him, rather than those needing the job the most. It's a disgrace." The others sympathized with her burden.
"It isn't right that a few men should have so much more than they need, while so many people have so much less,"
the man with the droopy eyelids said.
"It's immoral." "Man has no right to exist for his own sake," Mother was quick to put in as she nibbled on a piece of dense cake, while glancing again at the grimly silent man. "I tell Howard all the time that self-sacrifice in the service of others is man's highest moral duty and his only reason for being placed in this life. To that end," Mother announced, "I have decided to contribute 500 gold crowns to our cause."
The other people gasped their delight and congratulated Mother for her charitable nature. They agreed, as they sneaked peeks across the room, that the Creator would reward her in the next life, and talked about all they would be able to do to help those less fortunate souls. Mother finally turned and regarded Nikki for a moment, and then said, "I believe my daughter is old enough to learn to help others." Nikki sat forward on the edge of her chair, thrilled at the idea of at last putting her hand to what Mother and her friends said was noble work. It was as if the Creator himself had offered her a path to salvation. "I would so like to do good, Mother." Mother cast a questioning look at the man in the straight chair. "Brother Nareff?" The deep creases of his face pleated to each side as the thin line of his mouth stretched in a smile. There was no joy in it, or in his dark eyes hooded beneath the brow of tangled white and black hairs. He wore a creased cap and heavy robes as dark as dried blood. Wisps of his wiry hair above his ears curled up around the edge of the cap that came halfway down on his forehead. He stroked his jaw with the side of a finger as he spoke in a voice that almost rattled the teacups. "So, child, you wish to be a little soldier?"
"Well, no, sir."
Nikki didn't know what soldiering had to do with doing good. Mother always said that Father pandered to men in an evil occupation, soldiers. She said soldiers only cared about killing.
"I wish to help those in need."
"That is what we all try to do, child." His spooky smile remained fixed on his face as he spoke. "We here are all soldiers in the Fellowship of Order, as we call our little group. All soldiers fighting for justice." Everyone seemed too timid to look directly at him. They glanced for a moment, looked away, then glanced back again, as if his face was not something to be taken in all at once, but sipped at, like a scalding hot, foul-tasting remedy. Mother's brown eyes darted around like a cockroach looking for a crack.
"Why, of course, Brother Nareff. That's the only moral sort of soldier, the charitable sort."
She urged Nikki up and scooted her forward.
"Nikki, Brother Nareff here is a great man. Brother Nareff is the high priest of the Fellowship of Order, an ancient sect devoted to doing the Creator's will in this world. Brother Nareff is a sorcerer."
She cast a smile up at him.
"Brother Nareff, this is my daughter Nikki."
Her mother's hands pushed her at the man as if she were an offering for the Creator. Unlike everyone else, Nikki couldn't take her gaze from his hooded eyes. She had never seen their like. There was nothing in them but dark, cold emptiness. He held out a hand. "Pleased to meet you, Nikki."
"Curtsy and kiss his hand, dear," Mother prompted.
Nikki went to one knee. She kissed the knuckles so as not to have to put her lips on the spongy web of thick blue veins covering the back of his hairy hand floating before her face. The whitish knobs were cold, but not icy, as she had expected. "We welcome you to our movement, Nikki," he said in that deep, rattling voice of his. "With your mother's caring hand raising you up, I know you will do the Creator's work." Nikki thought that the Creator himself must be very much like this man. From all the things her mother told her, Nikki feared the Creator's wrath. She was old enough to know that she had to start doing the good work her mother always talked about, if she was to have any chance at salvation. Everyone said Mother was a caring, moral person. Nikki wanted to be a good person, too. But good work seemed so hard, so stern, not at all like her father's work, where people smiled and laughed and talked with their hands.
"Thank you, Brother Nareff," Nikki said. "I will do my best to do good in the world."
"One day, with the help of fine young people like you, we will change the world. I don't delude myself. With so much callousness among men, it will take time to win true converts. But we here in this room, along with others of like mind throughout the land, are the foundation of hope."
"Is the fellowship a secret, then?" Nikki asked in a whisper.
Everyone chuckled. Brother Nareff didn't laugh, but his mouth smiled again. "No, child. Quite the contrary. It is our most fervent wish and duty to spread the truth of mankind's corruption. The Creator is perfect. We mortals are but miserable wretches. We must recognize our wicked nature if we hope to avoid His righteous wrath and reap our deliverance in the next world. Self-sacrifice for the good of all is the only route to salvation. Our fellowship is open to all those willing to give of themselves and live ethical lives. Most people don't take us seriously. Some day they will. Gleaming mousy eyes around the room watched without blinking as his deep, powerful voice rose like the Creator's own fury. A day will come when the hot flames of change will sweep across the land, burning away the old, the decaying, and the foul, to allow a new order to grow from the blackened remains of evil. After we burn clean the world, there will be no kings, yet the world will have order, championed by the hand of the common man, for the common man. Only then will there be no hunger, no shivering in the cold, no suffering without help. The good of the people will be put above the selfish desires of the individual. Nikki wanted to do good. She truly did. But his voice sounded to her like a rusty dungeon door grating shut on her. All the eyes in the room watched her to see if she was good, like her mother.
That sounds wonderful, Brother Narev.
He nodded. It will be, child. You will help bring this to be. Let your feelings be your guide. You will be a soldier marching toward a new world order. It will be a long and arduous task. You must keep the faith. The rest of us in this room will not likely live to see it flourish. But perhaps you will live long enough to one day see such a wondrous order come to pass. Nikki swallowed.
I will pray for it, Brother Narev.
Chapter 11. The next day, loaded with a big basket of bread, Nikki was let out of the carriage along with a gaggle of other people from the fellowship to fan out and distribute bread to the needy. Mother had attired her in a ruffled red dress for the special occasion. Her short white stockings had designs stitched in red thread. Filled with pride to at last be doing good, Nikki marched down the garbage-strewn street armed with her basket of bread, thinking about the day when the hope of a new order could be spread to all, so that all could finally rise up out of destitution and despair. Some people smiled and thanked her for the bread. Some took the bread without a word or a smile. Most, though, were surly about it, complaining that the bread was late and the loaves were too small or the wrong kind. Nikki was not discouraged. She told them what Mother had said, that it was the baker's fault because he baked bread for profit first, and since he received a reduced rate for charity, baked that second. Nikki told them that she was sorry that wicked people treated them as second-rate, but that some day the Fellowship of Order would come to the land and see to it that everyone was treated the same. As Nikki walked down the street handing out the bread, a man snatched her arm and pulled her into the stench of a dark, narrow alley. She offered him a loaf of bread. He swiped the basket out of her hands. He said he wanted silver or gold. Nikki told him she had no money. She gasped in panic as he yanked her close. His filthy, probing fingers groped everywhere on her body, even violating her most private places looking for a purse, but found none hidden on her. He pulled off her shoes and threw them away when he found they had no coins hidden in them. His fist punched her twice in the stomach. Nikki crashed to the ground. He spat a curse at her as he stole away into the shattered heaps of refuse. Holding herself up on trembling arms, Nikki vomited into the oily water running from under the mounds of offal. People passing the alley looked in and saw her retching there on the ground, but turned their eyes back to the street and hurried on their way. A few quickly darted into the alley, bent and scooped up bread from the overturned basket before rushing off. Nikki panted, tears stinging her eyes, trying to get her wind back. Her knees were bleeding, her dress was splattered with scum. When she returned home in tears, Mother smiled at seeing her. Their plight often brings tears to my eyes, too. Nikki shook her head, her golden locks swinging side to side, and told Mother that a man had grabbed her and hit her, demanding money. Nicky reached for her mother as she wailed in misery that he was a wicked, wicked man. Mother smacked her mouth.
"Don't you dare judge people. You are just a child. How can you presume to judge others?"
Stopped cold, Nicky was bewildered by the slap, more startling than painful. The rebuke stung more.
"But, Mother, he was cruel to me. He touched me everywhere, and then he hit me."
Mother smacked her mouth again, harder the second time.
"I'll not have you disgrace me before Brother Narev and my friends with such insensitive talk, do you hear? You don't know what made him do it. Perhaps he has sick children at home and he needs money to buy medicine. Here he sees some spoiled rich child, and he finally breaks, knowing his own child has been cheated in life by the likes of you and all your fine things. You don't know what burdens life has handed the man. Don't you dare to judge people for their actions just because you are too callous and insensitive to take the time to understand them. But I think—"
Mother smacked her across the mouth a third time, hard enough to stagger her.
"You think? Thinking is a vile acid that corrodes faith. It is your duty to believe, not think. The mind of man is inferior to that of the Creator. Your thoughts, the thoughts of anyone, are worthless, as all mankind is worthless. You must have faith that the Creator has invested his goodness in those wretched souls. Feelings, not thinking, must be your guide. Faith, not thinking, must be your only path."
Nicky swallowed back her tears.
"Then what should I do?" "You should be ashamed that the world treats those poor souls so cruelly, that they would so pitifully strike out in confusion. In the future, you should find a way to help people like that, because you are able, and they are not. That is your duty."
That night, when her father came home and tiptoed into her room to see if she was tucked in snugly, Nicky clutched two of his big fingers together and held them tight to her cheek. Even though her mother said he was a wicked man, it felt better than anything else in the world when he knelt beside the bed and silently stroked her brow. In her work on the streets, Nicky came to understand the needs of many of the people there. Their problems seemed insurmountable. No matter what she did, it never seemed to resolve anything. Brother Narev said it was only a sign that she wasn't giving enough of herself. Each time she failed, at Brother Narev's or Mother's urging, Nicky redoubled her efforts. One night at dinner, after being in the fellowship several years, she said,
"Father, there is a man I have been trying to help. He has 10 children and no job. Will you hire him, please?"
Father looked up from his soup. "Why?"
"I told you, he has 10 children."
"But what sort of work can he do? Why would I want him?"
"Because he needs a job."
Father set down his spoon. "Nicky, dear, I employ skilled workers. That he has 10 children is not going to shape steel now, is it? What can the man do? What skills has he?"
"If he had a skill, Father, he could get work. Is it fair that his children should starve because people won't give him a chance?"
Father looked at her as if inspecting a wagon load of some suspicious new metal. Mother's narrow mouth turned up in a little smile, but she said nothing. "A chance? At what? He has no skill."
"With a business as big as yours, surely you can give him a job."
He tapped a finger on the stem of his spoon as he considered her determined expression. He cleared his throat. "Well, perhaps I could use a man to load wagons."
"He can't load wagons. He has a bad back. He hasn't been able to work for years because of his back troubling him so."
Father's brow drew down. "His back didn't prevent him from begetting 10 children. Nicky wanted to do good, and so she met his stare with a steady look of her own.
"Must you be so intolerant, Father? You have jobs, and this man needs one. He has hungry children needing to be fed and clothed. Would you deny him a living just because he has never had a fair chance in life? Are you so rich that all your gold has blinded your eyes to the needs of humble people?"
"But I need—"
"Must you always frame everything in terms of what you need, instead of what others need? Must everything be for you? It's a business, And what is the purpose of a business? Isn't it to employ those who need work? Wouldn't it be better if the man had a job instead of having to humiliate himself begging? Is that what you want? For him to beg rather than work? Aren't you the one who always speaks so highly of hard work?
Nikki was firing the questions like arrows, getting them off so fast he couldn't get a word through her barrage. Mother smiled as Nikki rolled out words she knew by heart.
Why must you reserve your greatest cruelty for the least fortunate among us? Why can't you for once think of what you can do to help, instead of always thinking of money, money, money? Would it hurt you to hire a man who needs a job? Would it, Father? Would it bring your business to an end? Would that ruin you?
The room echoed her noble questions. He stared at her as if seeing her for the first time. He looked as if real arrows had struck him. His jaw worked, but no words came out. He didn't seem able to move. He could only gape at her. Mother beamed.
Well, he finally said, I guess...
He picked up his spoon and stared down into his soup.
Send him around and I'll give him a job.
Nikki swelled with a new sense of pride and power. She had never known it would be so easy to stagger her father. She had just bested his selfish nature with nothing more than goodness.
Father pushed back from the table. I need to go back to the shop.
His eyes searched the table, but he would not look at Nikki or Mother.
I just remembered. I have some work I must see to.
After he had gone, Mother said, I am glad to see that you have chosen the righteous path, Nikki, instead of following his evil ways. You will never regret letting your love of mankind guide your feelings. The Creator will smile upon you.
Nikki knew she had done the right thing, the moral thing.
Yet the thought that came to haunt her victory was the night her father had come into her room and silently stroked her brow as she had held two of his fingers to her cheek.
The man went to work for Father. Father never mentioned anything about it. His work kept him busy and away from home. Nikki's work took more and more of her time as well. She missed seeing that look in his eyes. She guessed she was growing up.
The next spring, when Nikki was 13, she came home one day from her work at the fellowship to find a woman in the sitting room with Mother. Something about the woman's demeanor made the hair at the back of Nikki's neck stand on end. Both women rose as Nikki set aside her list of names of people needing things.
Nikki, darling, this is Sister Alessandra. She's traveled here from the Palace of the Prophets in Tanamura.
The woman was older than Mother. She had a long braid of fine brown hair looped around in a circle and pinned to the back of her skull like a loaf of braided bread. Her nose was a little too big for her face, and she was plain, but not at all ugly. Her eyes focused on Nikki with an unsettling intensity, and they didn't dart about the way Mother's always did.
"Was it quite a journey, Sister Alessandra?" Nikki asked after she had curtsied. "All the way from Tanamura, I mean."
3 days is all, Sister Alessandra said.
A smile grew on her face as she took in Nikki's bony frame.
My, my! So little, yet for such grown-up work.
She held out a hand toward a chair.
Won't you sit with us, dear? Are you a sister with the fellowship?
Nikki asked, not really understanding who the woman was.
The what?
Nikki, Mother said. Sister Alessandra is a sister of the light.
Astonished, Nikki dropped into a chair. Sisters of the light had the gift, just like her and Mother. Nikki didn't know very much about the sisters except that they served the Creator. That still didn't settle her stomach. To have such a woman right there in her house was intimidating. Like when she stood before Brother Narab, she felt an inexplicable sense of doom. Nikki was also impatient because she had duties waiting. There were donations to collect. She had older sponsors who accompanied her to some of the places. For other places, they said a young girl could get better results by herself, by shaming people who had more than they deserved. Those people who had businesses all knew who she was. They would always stammer and ask how her father was.
As she had been instructed, Nikki told them how pleased her father would be to know they were thoughtful to the needy. In the end, most became civic-minded. Then there were remedies Nikki needed to take to women with sick children. There wasn't enough clothing for the children either. Nikki was trying to get some people to give cloth and other people to sew clothes. Some people had no homes. Others were crowded together in little rooms. She was trying to get some rich people to donate a building. Also, Nikki had been assigned the task of locating jugs for women to bring water from the well. She needed to pay a visit to the potter. Some of the older children had been caught stealing. Others had been fighting, and a few of them were beating younger children bloody. Nikki had been pleading on their behalf, trying to explain that they had no fair chance and were only reacting to their cruel circumstance. She hoped to convince Father to take on at least a few, so they might have work. The problems just kept mounting, without any end in sight. It seemed like the more people the fellowship helped, the more people there were who needed help. Nikki had thought that she was going to solve the problems of the world. She was beginning to feel hopelessly inadequate. It was her own failings, she knew. She needed to work harder. "Do you read and write, dear?" the sister asked. "Not very much, sister. Mostly just names. I've much too much to do for those less fortunate than myself. Their needs must come before any selfish desires of my own." Mother smiled and nodded to herself. "Practically a good spirit in the flesh," the sister's eyes teared. "I have heard about your work."
"You have?"
Nikki felt a flash of pride, but then she thought of how things never seemed to get better, despite all her efforts, and her sense of failure returned. Besides, Mother said pride was evil.
"I don't see what's so special about what I do. The people in the streets are the ones who are special because of their suffering in horrid conditions. They are the true inspiration."
Mother smiled contentedly. Sister Alessandra leaned forward, her tone serious.
"Have you learned to use your gift, child?"
"Mother teaches me to do some small things, like how to heal little troubles. But I know it would be unfair to flaunt it over those less blessed than I, so I try my best not to use it."
The sister folded her hands in her lap.
"I've been talking to your mother while we waited for you. She's done a fine job of getting you started on the right path. We feel, however, that you would have so much more to offer were you to serve a higher calling."
Nikki sighed.
"Well, all right. Maybe I can get up a little earlier, but I already have my duties to the needy, and I will have to fit this other in as I can. I hope you understand, sister. I'm not trying to get undeserved sympathy. Honestly, I'm not. But I hope you don't need this calling done too soon, as I'm already quite busy."
Sister Alessandra smiled in a long, suffering sort of way.
"You don't understand, Nikki. We would like you to continue your work with us at the Palace of the Prophets. You would be a novice at first, of course, but one day you will be a Sister of the Light, and as such you will carry on with what you have started."
Panic welled up in Nikki like rising floodwaters. There were so many people who hung to life only by a thread she tended. She had friends at the fellowship whom she had come to love. She had so much to do. She didn't want to leave Mother and even Father. He was evil, she knew, but he wasn't evil to her. He was selfish and greedy, she knew, but he still tucked her into bed sometimes and patted her shoulder. She was sure she would see something in his blue eyes again if she just gave it time. She didn't want to leave him. For some reason, she desperately needed to again see that spark in his eyes. She was being selfish, she knew.
"I have needy people here, Sister Alessandra." Nikki blinked at her tears. "My responsibility is to them. I'm sorry, but I can't abandon them."
At that moment, Father came in the door. He stopped in an awkward posture, his legs frozen in mid-stride, with his hand on the lever, staring at the sister.
"Who's this, then?"
Mother stood.
"Howard, this is Alessandra. She is a Sister of the Light. She's come to—"
"No! I'll not have it, do you hear? She's our daughter, and the sisters can't have her."
Sister Alessandra stood, giving Mother a sidelong glance.
"Please ask your husband to leave. This is not his business."
"Not my business? She's my daughter. You'll not take her."
He lunged forward to seize Nicky's outstretched hand. The sister lifted a finger, and to Nicky's astonishment, he was thrown back in a sparkling flash of light. Father's back slammed against the wall. He slid down, clutching his chest. As he gasped for breath, tears bursting forth, Nicky ran for him, but Sister Alessandra snatched her by the arm and held her back.
"Howard," Mother said through gritted teeth, "the child is my business to raise. I carry the Creator's gift. You gave your word when our union was arranged that if we had a girl, and she had the gift, I would have the exclusive authority to raise her as I saw fit. I believe this to be the right thing to do, what the Creator wants. With the sisters, she will have time to learn to read. She will have time to learn to use her gift to help people as only the sisters can. You will keep your word. I will see to this. I'm sure you have work to which you must immediately return."
With the flat of his hand, he rubbed his chest. Finally, his arms dropped to his sides. Head down, he shuffled to the door. Before he pulled closed the door, his gaze met Nicky's. Through the tears, she saw the spark in his eyes, as if he had things to tell her. But then it was gone, and he pulled the door shut behind himself. Sister Alessandra said it would be best if they left at once, and if Nicky didn't see him just now. She promised that if Nicky followed instructions, and after she was settled, and after she had learned to read, and after she had learned to use her gift, she would see him again. Nicky learned to read and to use her gift, and mastered everything else she was supposed to master. She fulfilled all the requirements. She did everything expected of her. Her life as a novice to become a Sister of the Light was numbingly selfless. Sister Alessandra forgot her promise. She was not pleased to be reminded of it and found more work that Nicky needed to do. Several years after she had been taken to the palace, Nicky again saw Brother Narev. She came across him quite by accident. He was working as a stable hand at the Palace of the Prophets. He smiled his slow smile with his eyes fixed on her. He told her that he had gotten the idea to go to the palace by her example. He said he wished to live long enough to see order come to the world. She thought it an odd occupation for him. He said that he found working for the sisters morally superior to contributing his labor to the evil of profit. He said it mattered not if she chose to tell anyone at the palace anything about him or his work for the fellowship, but he asked her not to tell the sisters that he was gifted, since they would not allow him to continue to stay and work in the stables if they knew, and he would refuse to serve them should they discover his gift, because, he said, he wanted to serve the Creator in his own quiet way. Nicky honored his secret, not so much out of any sense of loyalty, but mostly because she was kept far too busy with his studies and work to concern herself with Brother Narev and his fellowship. She rarely had occasion to see him, mucking out horse stalls, and as his importance in her childhood had faded into her past, she never really even gave him a second thought. The palace had work they wished her to put her attention to, much the same sort of work Brother Narev would have approved of. Only many years later did she come to discover his real reasons for having been at the Palace of the Prophets. Sister Alessandra saw to it that Nicky was kept busy. She was allowed no time for such selfish indulgences as going home for a visit. 27 years after she had been taken away to become a Sister of the Light, still a novice, Nicky again saw her father. It was at his funeral. Mother had sent word for Nicky to return home to see Father because he was in failing health. Nicky immediately rushed home, accompanied by Sister Alessandra. By the time Nicky arrived, Father was already dead. Mother said that for several weeks he had been begging her to send for his daughter. She sighed and said she put it off, thinking he would get better. Besides, she said, she hadn't wanted to disturb Nicky's important work, not for such a trivial matter. She said it had been the only thing he asked for, to see Nicky. Mother thought that was silly, since he was a man who didn't care about people. Why should he need to see anyone? He died alone, while Mother was out helping the victims of an uncaring world. By that time, Nikki was 40. Mother, though, still thinking of Nikki as a young woman because under the spell at the palace she had aged only enough to look to be maybe 15 or 16, told her to wear a pretty, brightly colored dress because it wasn't really a sad occasion after all. Nikki stood looking at the body for a long time. Her chance to see his blue eyes again was forever lost. For the first time in years, the pain made her feel something down deep inside. It felt good to feel something again, even if it was pain. As Nikki stood looking at her father's sunken face, Sister Alessandra told Nikki that she was sorry she had to take her away, but that in her whole life she had not encountered a woman with a gift as powerful as it was in Nikki, and that such a thing as the Creator had given her was not to be wasted. Nikki said she understood. Since she had ability, it was only right that she use it to help those in need. At the Palace of the Prophets, Nikki was said to be the most selfless, caring novice they had under their roof. Everyone pointed to her and told the younger novices to look to Nikki's example. Even the prelate had commended her. The praise was but a buzz in her ear. It was an injustice to be better than others. Try as she might, Nikki could not escape her father's legacy of excellence. His taint coursed through her veins, oozed from every pore, and infected everything she did. The more selfless she was, the more it only confirmed her superiority, and thus her wickedness. She knew that could mean only one thing. She was evil. "Try not to remember him like this," Sister Alessandra said after a long silence as they stood before the body. "Try to remember what he was like when he was alive."
"I can't," Nikki said. "I never knew him when he was alive."
Mother and her friends at the fellowship ran the business. She wrote Nikki joyful letters telling her how she had put many of the needy to work at the armorers. She said the business could afford it with all the wealth it had accumulated. Mother was proud that the wealth could now be put to a moral use. She said father's death had been a cloaked blessing because it meant help at last for those who had always deserved it most. It was all part of the Creator's plan, she said. Mother had to raise her prices in order to pay the wages of all the people she'd given work. A lot of the older workers left. Mother said she was glad they were gone because they had uncooperative attitudes. Orders fell behind. Suppliers began demanding to be paid before delivering goods. Mother discontinued having the armor proofed because the new workers complained that it was an unfair standard to be held to. They said they were trying their best, and that was what counted. Mother sympathized. The battering mill had to be sold. Some of the customers stopped ordering armor and weapons. Mother said they would be better off without such intolerant people. She sought new laws from the Duke to require work to be spread out equally, but the laws were slow in coming. The few remaining customers hadn't paid their account for quite a while, but promised to catch up. In the meantime, their goods were shipped, if late. Within 6 months of Father dying, the business failed. The vast fortune he had built over a lifetime was gone. Some of the skilled workers once hired by Father moved on, hoping to find work at armories in distant places. Most men who stayed could find only menial work. They were lucky to have that. Many of the new workers demanded Mother do something. She and the fellowship petitioned other businesses to take them on. Some businesses tried to help, but most were in no position to hire workers. The armory had been the largest employer in the area and drew many other people employed in other occupations. Other businesses, like traders, smaller suppliers, and cargo carriers who had depended on the armory, failed for lack of work. Businesses in the city, everything from bakers to butchers, lost customers and were reluctantly forced to let men go. Mother asked the Duke to speak with the king. The Duke said the king was considering the problem. Like her father's armory, other buildings were abandoned as people left to find work in thriving cities elsewhere. Squatters at the fellowship's urging took over many of the abandoned buildings. The empty places became the sites of robberies and even murders. Many a woman who went near those places regretted it. Mother couldn't sell the weapons from her closed armory, so she gave them to the needy so they might protect themselves. Despite her efforts, crime only increased. In honor of all her good work and her father's service to the government, the king granted Mother a pension that allowed her to stay in the house with a reduced staff. She continued her work with the fellowship, trying to right all the injustice that she believed was responsible for the failure of the business. She hoped one day to reopen the shop and employ people. For her righteous work, the king awarded her a silver medal. Mother wrote that the king proclaimed she was as close to a good spirit in the flesh as he had ever seen. Nikki regularly received word of awards Mother was given for her selfless work. 18 years later, when Mother died, Nikki still looked like a young woman of perhaps 17. She wanted a fine black dress to wear to the funeral, the finest available. The palace said that it was unseemly for a novice to make such a selfish request, and it was out of the question. They said they would supply only simple, humble clothes. When Nikki arrived home, she went to the tailor to the king and told him that for her mother's funeral she needed the finest black dress he had ever made. He told her the price. She informed him she had no money, but said she needed the dress anyway. The tailor, a man with 3 chins, waxy down growing from his ears, abnormally long yellowish fingernails, and an unfailing lecherous smirk, said that there were things he needed, too. He leaned close, lightly holding her smooth arm in his knobby fingers, and intimated that if she would take care of his needs, he would take care of hers. Nikki wore the finest black dress ever made to her mother's funeral. Mother had been a woman who had devoted her entire life to the needs of others. Nikki could never again look forward to seeing her mother's cockroach-brown eyes. Unlike at her father's funeral, Nikki felt no pain reach down to touch that abysmal place inside her. Nikki knew she was a terrible person. For the first time, she realized that for some reason she simply no longer cared. From that day on, Nikki never wore any dress but black. 123 years later, standing at the railing overlooking the great hall, Nikki saw eyes that stunned her with their sense of an inner value held dear, but what had been an uncertain ember in her father's eyes was ablaze in Richard's. She still didn't know what it was. She knew only that it was the difference between life and death, and that she had to destroy him. Now, at long last, she knew how. If only, when she had been little, someone had shown her father such mercy. Chapter 12. Trudging down the road between the edge of the city of Fairfield and the estate where the 3 sisters had told her Emperor Jagang had set up his residence, Nikki scanned the surrounding jumble of the Imperial Order's encampment, looking for a specific station of tents. She knew they would be somewhere in the area. Jagang liked to have them close at hand. Regular sleeping tents, wagons, and men lay like a dark soot over the fields and hills as far as she could see. Sky and land alike seemed tinted by a dusky taint. Sprinkled through the dark fields, campfires twinkled like a sky full of stars. The day was becoming oppressively dim, not only with the approach of evening, but also from the dull overcast of churning gray clouds. The wind kicked up in little fits, sending tents and clothes flapping, fluttering the campfire's flames, and whipping smoke this way and that. The gust helped coat the tongue with the fetid stench of human and animal waste, smothering any pleasant but weak cooking aroma that struggled to take to the air. The longer the army stayed in place, the worse it would get. Up ahead, the elegant buildings of the estate rose above the dark grime at its feet. Jagang was there. Because he had access to sisters Georgia, Rochelle, and Aubrey's minds, he would know Nikki was back. He would be waiting for her. The Emperor would have to wait. She had something else to do first. Without Jagang able to enter her mind, she was free to pursue it. Nikki saw what she was looking for off in the distance. She could just make them out standing above the smaller tents. She left the road and headed through the crowded snarl of troops. Even from the distance, she could distinguish the distinctive sounds coming from the group of special tents, hear it over the laughing and singing, the crackle of fires, the sizzle of meat in skillets, the scraping rasp of whetstones on metal, the ring of hammers on steel, and the rhythm of saws. Boisterous men grabbed at her arms and legs, or tried to snatch her dress as she marched along, picking her way through the disorder. The rowdy soldiers were but a minor consideration. She simply pulled away, ignoring their mocking calls of love as she made her way through the throng. When a husky soldier seized her wrist in his powerful grip, yanking her around to a jerking halt, she paused only long enough to loose her power and burst his beating heart within his chest. Other men laughed when they saw him collapse to the ground with a thud, not yet realizing he was dead, but none tried to claim his intended prize. She heard the words, "Death's mistress," pass in whispers among the men. She finally made her way through the gauntlet. Soldiers played dice, ate beans, or snored in their bedrolls beside the tents where captives screamed under the agony of torture. Two men lugged a corpse, dragging some of its innards out of a big tent. They threw the flaccid form in a wagon with a tangle of others. Nikki snapped her fingers at an unshaven soldier coming from the direction of another tent.
"Let me see the list, Captain."
She knew he was the officer in charge by the blue canvas cover of the register book he carried. He scowled at her a moment, but when he glanced down at her black dress, a look of recognition came over his face. He passed her the grubby, rumpled book. It had a deep crease across the middle, as if someone had accidentally sat on it. The pages that had fallen out had been pushed back in, but they never fit right, and their edges stuck out here and there to become frayed and filthy.
"Not much to report, mistress, but please let His Excellency know that we've tried just about every skill known, and she isn't talking."
Nikki opened the book and began scanning the list of recent names and what was known about them.
"Her? Who are you talking about, Captain?" she mumbled as she read.
"Why, the moored Sith, of course."
Nikki turned her eyes up toward the man.
"The moored Sith, of course. Where is she?"
He pointed at a tent a ways off through the disarray.
"I know His Excellency said he didn't expect a witch of her dark talents to give us any information about Lord Rahl, but I was hoping to surprise him with good news."
He hooked his thumbs behind his belt as he let out a sigh of frustration.
"No such luck."
Nikki eyed the tent for a moment. She heard no screams. She had never before seen one of those women, the moored Sith, but she knew a little about them. She knew that using magic against one was a deadly mistake. She went back to reading the entries in the register. There was nothing of much interest to her. Most of the people were from around here. They were merely a sampling collected to check what they might know. They would not have the information she wanted. Nikki tapped a line near the end of the writing in the book. It said, "Messenger."
"Where is this one?"
The captain tilted his head, indicating a tent behind him.
"I put one of my best questioners with him. Last I checked, there was nothing from him yet, but that was early this morning."
It had been all day since he had checked. All day could be an eternity under torture. Like all the rest of the tents used for questioning prisoners, the one with the messenger stood above the surrounding field tents, which were only large enough for the soldiers to lie in. Nikki pushed the book at the officer's thick gut.
"Thank you. That will be all."
"You'll be giving His Excellency a report, then?"
Nikki nodded absently at his question. Her mind was already elsewhere.
"You'll tell him that there is little to be learned from this lot."
No one was eager to stand before Jagang and admit they were unable to accomplish a task, even if there was nothing to accomplish. Jagang did not appreciate excuses. Nikki nodded as she strode away, heading for the tent holding the messenger.
"I'll be seeing him shortly. I'll give him the report for you, Captain."
As soon as she threw back the flap and entered, she saw that she was too late. The messy remains of the messenger lay on a narrow wooden table affixed with glistening tools of the trade. The messenger's arms hung down off the sides, dripping warm blood. Nikki saw that the questioner had a folded piece of paper.
"What have you there?"
He held up the paper and flashed her a grin.
"Something His Excellency will be very pleased to hear about. I've got a map."
"A map of what?"
"Where this fellow's been. I drew it all out from what he volunteered."
He laughed at his own humor. She didn't.
Really?
Nicky said. The man's grin was what had her attention. A man like this only grinned when he had something he'd been seeking, something to bring him favor in the eyes of his superiors.
And where has the man been?
To see his leader.
This is the end of this cassette. This program is continued on side one of cassette number 4.